ओम ज्ञानच निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
गतिर् भारता प्रभु साक्षी निवास शरणं सुहृत् प्रभव प्रलय स्थानं निधानं बीजमव्ययम्। I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal seed. Perhaps you all know the story of when Prabhupada was in Japan negotiating the prices for printing his books with the Dai Nippon printing company, that he was in the conference room with all the big leaders of the company, and then after the discussion they all left and Prabhupada was left with a junior executive in the room. Prabhupada and I think Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So Prabhupada asked this junior executive, what is your goal of life? Now on the table, all the executives, they had put their visiting cards. So he arranged them, all the visiting, this man, young Japanese man, in reply, arranged all the visiting cards with the chief executive officers on top, deputy executive officers, managing director, in order of status, and his on the bottom, because he was the most junior of them. And he pulled his own card from the bottom and put it on top. That is my goal, to get on top of the company. And Prabhupada explained to him, he politely listened, Prabhupada explained to him that this is not the goal of life. The goal of life is to understand Krishna. But he was a murha, therefore he could not understand. Nate vidu swartha gatim hi vishnum. Swartha gati, this important verse from Prahlad Maharaj's teaching says, Nate vidu swartha gatim hi vishnum. The same word gati comes, swartha gati. Swa artha gati. Swa means own. Artha means what is our interest. And gati means what is our destination. So those who are foolish, they do not know that the goal of life is Vishnu. They don't know. What is your real self-interest? Everyone is acting for self-interest. Is it not? Everyone is acting in a way which they think will be best for themselves. And why are the people, you see the people, they go to work, crammed up in some train or bus, and they do some nasty work. Why? Because they think it is in my self-interest to do so, because by doing this I will get some money. And then by getting money I will support myself and my family. So they think that their goal of life is simply to work hard. But the real goal is swartha gatim hi means certain, giving emphasis. The real goal of life is Vishnu, to understand Krishna. And without understanding Krishna, we don't have any fixed destination. We're simply revolving in the cycle of birth and death, meaninglessly. It's all meaningless. Just when I was coming in the airport at Delhi, just a few days ago, so while we were waiting in those long lines for passport control, to entertain the passengers at 6 o'clock in the morning, they had sports on TV. Wonderful. So it was showing these people just running round and round and round. And there was this commentary going on. And the way he was talking, and now they're coming to in the 27th lap, and he looks as if he's getting a little tired. The world record holder, the way he was talking, as if it was the most important thing in the world, and a bunch of people were just running round and round and round. And then when that was finished, they had the cycle race. And it was the same thing, just a bunch of people cycling, and the same guy was talking, and then some woman's voice came in, yes, and I think it's one of the most exciting races we've ever. The way they talk, as if it's, you'll see also, they'll put in the newspaper, some very important game of cricket is coming up, crucial match. They're giving importance to things which have no importance. It's meaningless. They invent some meaning to life. They have no meaning to their lives, therefore they invent some meaning. They make sports or some, they have some war or something, which they, I was just discussing with Jana Ananda Prabhu that I told us that some football player had been transferred for £4.5 million, and then another one was transferred for £15 million. Instead of kicking a ball for one football club, he's £15 million. Huge amount of money. So I was asking, where does all this money come from? And he said that, he told me that people, they get some rich people, they put their money into these football clubs because they feel it's like, you know, it's like their heart, like their, if their football team wins, it's just, in, just when I was in England, was it this year or last year, there was some European championships football and there were photo, there were big billboards showing the photos of someone when their team scored a goal and look of bliss on their face, and then a look, the same thing when the goal was scored against their team. I mean, they take it so seriously. They're, you see these football games, there'll be millions of people all over the world watching. But what is the meaning? Is there any meaning to it? Does it really make any difference whether in the course of 90 minutes a bunch of people running around, if the ball goes in this side or that side, what the hell difference does it make to anything? It's, but they ascribe meaning to it. Because people, they want some meaning in life. Why are there so many philosophies in the world? All right, forget football. That's really gross and stupid. But there are philosophers and intellectuals also. But why there are so many philosophies? Because people, they're looking for, they try to put some meaning in their life. Even there are many philosophies which say that everything is meaningless. Existentialism, for instance. They say that ultimately everything, then if everything is so meaningless, then why do they make a whole philosophy to explain it? They make, they write books, and the conclusion is ultimately nothing has so meaning. Then why are you so busy explaining it if it has no meaning? As Prabhupada noted in his, in the 16th chapter, there's this verse, asatyam apratishtamte jagadaharanishwaram. Asatyam, there's no reality in the world. Apratishtam, there's no basis to it. Jagadaharanishwaram, there's no supreme controller. So Prabhupada says that in the purport that the demons, they say this world is just a phantasmagoria, it's just like a dream. But as Prabhupada knows, but they're very busy trying to enjoy this dream. They say it has no meaning, but they're very busy trying to enjoy it. So no one, they can't live without meaning. That's why, it's just like science, why should they be so concerned to discuss? They're researching so many things, just that they want to research the origin of the universe. What difference does it make to them? They don't believe in any God, so what difference does it make to them? What is the origin of the universe? Why should they be so concerned to understand it? Because that inherent drive is there to try to understand. But they're missing the point. Natevidu Swarthagatihi Vishnu. What is the missing point? The scientists, they're trying to find some unified field theory, or the one theory of everything. Which they're trying to find one scientific theory which will include all other theories and by which all other theories can be synthesized and explained. So they're trying to find that out by investigating mathematically, but they cannot find it out because the answer is Krishna. If you come to the end of all your mathematical studies and try to find out what is the ultimate meaning is Krishna. What holds everything together? What? Here we see Krishna is the sustainer. What is the sustenance within the universe? The scientists are out. They're trying to find out what is it that makes it, how is everything going on? But they cannot find out Krishna because Krishna cannot be known by mathematical means. He cannot be known by biological means. He cannot be known by looking through microscopes or telescopes. He's the greatest of the great. But it doesn't matter how great you make your telescope, you cannot see him. Any more than an ant crawling on the body of an elephant can never see the elephant because the elephant is too big for him to see. Cannot see it. So in the same way Krishna is so great, we cannot see him with our eyes or even with any telescope. Or Krishna is so small that you cannot see him either. But Krishna can be understood how? Bhaktya maam avijanati. Krishna can be understood by the process of devotional service. That's why Krishna says, yomam eva samudho janati purushottamam sasaravavid, that whoever knows me as all in all, he knows everything. Devotee knows everything. How is it? You can say a devotee knows everything. Then someone may ask, well, tell me how many windows are there in the Empire State Building. That doesn't, someone asked Prabhupada this. Prabhupada is saying devotee knows everything. So then someone, fool, asked Prabhupada, then, okay, tell me how many windows there are in the Empire State Building. Prabhupada said, knowing everything doesn't mean you know every minor detail, but you know how everything is going on. You understand what is the meaning of life and how everything goes on. Just like the scientists, they're bewildered. They don't know how the creation is going on, but devotees not only know how it's going on, but they know why it's going on, which is a question the scientists don't even think to ask. Why? What is the purpose of life? So a devotee, he knows by Shastra Chakshuhu, by seeing through the eyes of scripture, Shutekshanapanta, this is described in Bhagavatam. Krishna can be understood by the process of seeing by hearing. Actually, seeing means hearing, not seeing. Seeing is a very poor way of getting knowledge, but hearing is a very good way. Just like if you walk into a laboratory and you see there's so many test tubes and you don't know what's going on, but if someone explains to you, well, in this test tube we put this acid and here we're heating it and here we're distilling it and condensing it and these are the things. So when it's explained, then you can understand. But if it's not explained, you can see it, but you have no understanding of what's going on. That's why when we go to school, primarily we learn by hearing. Everything is explained. Simply showing, that won't help us. And by hearing, you can get to know so many things which is not possible to understand by seeing. Just like, how could you ever understand what is the capital of any country? Not by seeing. Even if you're living in Delhi, you could never understand it's the capital of India unless someone tells you. So many things. How are you going to understand what is the capital of China or Mexico? You have to go there? No. You can understand everything by sitting in one place and hearing. So by the process of hearing, and that hearing means hearing submissively from proper authorities, one can understand everything. And we see, just like Prabhupada, perfect devotee, he had perfectly heard. He said, because I heard nicely, therefore I can speak nicely. So he perfectly heard, and therefore he could meet scientists, philosophers, scholars, journalists, any kind of people, and he could give them the right answer to everything. Even sometimes, Prabhupada would correct them, you're asking the wrong question. There was in Caracas, some people asked that, what is that question? What is it they asked? Or why does anything exist? And Prabhupada said, no, that's the wrong question. You should ask, what is the source of everything? That is the proper question to ask. It's not the proper question. So they thought that would be, why does anything? First you have to understand, what is the source of everything? Then when you understand what is the source of everything, then you can understand why he made everything exist. So you asked the wrong question. You started at the wrong point. And so many times, sometimes people would ask questions and Prabhupada would give an answer, and it would seem that Prabhupada wasn't answering their question as if he'd misunderstood. But actually he was giving the right answer that they needed to hear. Because they may be asking the wrong question. So Prabhupada, he not only knew how to answer every question, but even if they asked the wrong question, he knew how to give the right answer. Who was saying that? There was some questions and answers. I think that was Bhavan's journal. So there were there were some questions from some newspaper, and they wanted Prabhupada to answer. No, it was a philosophy question. So the devotees who were asking the questions, they hadn't actually understood properly what the philosophers were, what they were saying. But still, Prabhupada gave all the right answers. If you go back and see what their philosophy actually is, you understand what I mean? There are these philosophy discussions. So the devotees who are interviewing, it seems they just picked up some summary of their philosophies. They didn't really go very deeply. And so they didn't really understand the philosophy. But still, if you take Prabhupada's answers and you take what their philosophy is, it still replies to every point. So a devotee, a pure devotee, he knows everything because he knows Krishna. He knows that the goal is Krishna. Therefore, his life is in focus. You see, there are many people who go through life without any focus. They simply live from day to day. And that's a whole philosophy that comes out from that existentialism. Live for today. Don't worry about, just live, enjoy today. Let it be. Just, be here now. Be here now. With no goal of be here now, but that's all right. Now you're young and you're enjoying. But in 50 years' time, if you're still alive, simply be here now. What are you going to do? You need crutches and you won't be able to work to support yourself. So this idea may seem very good, as long as you have the strength to enjoy, but when you're older and you're nearing death, then how is that going to help you, such a philosophy? So a devotee, he is thoughtful. As much as the non-devotees are thoughtless, devotee is very thoughtful. Any sane person must be thoughtful. That's why one of the qualities of a devotee is written that he is sane. I remember I first read that and I thought, that's very strange. Why should you say a devotee is sane? It seems like, I think everyone's sane. I mean, when you think of insane people, you think of people who are committed to a mental asylum, like that. But then Prabhupada is saying everyone is insane. Well, how is that? I mean, you see people, they're normal people, they're walking on the street and yes sir, no sir, and you walk in a shop and what would you like, or can I help you? They seem, quite normal people. But Prabhupada said they're insane. Why are they insane? Because they don't know what the goal of life is. They're simply living without considering why are they suffering, what is the purpose of life. It's just like, you can imagine, say there's a bus driving on a mountain road and the driver fell asleep or he had a heart attack or there is no driver and the bus is driving fast. And everyone in the bus is just sitting and talking to each other. Yes, it's a very nice bus ride. Are you enjoying it? Would you mind moving over a little bit so I could rest my arm? So they're very polite and talking. But you know, they're sitting and watching. The driver's already dead at the wheel. And they're driving on the mountain road. Any second they're going to go off the edge. So is that very... They're very sane and they're talking very politely and nicely. But any sane person would... Get a hold of the bus. They're going to crash and die. So it's not sane to act apparently sanely without knowing what your goal of life is, and especially seeing. Pashyanapi na pashyati. That Shukadeva Goswami in the beginning of his talks to Parikshit Maharaj says, they're seeing but they're not seeing. Everyone sees that my mother died, my father died, my grandfather died, and then my dog died, my cat died, and I'm seeing death all around me, and we're not considering, I'm going to die also. And we're just going on with life without considering anything. All right, yes, I let it. Yes, I'm living a happy life and I'll die soon. But what's going to happen to you after you die? Well, you know, shouldn't worry too much about that. We should be optimistic and have a positive outlook on life. Positive outlook on life. Why don't you consider what all the scriptures are saying? As you sow, so you shall reap. You will get a result. If you're inflicting violence and pain on others, you'll have to suffer. Tit for tat. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This, people don't know. They're simply living life without any goal. Or if they have a goal, it's a meaningless goal. Just like the junior executive in Dai Nippon. Pull out the card and put it on top. So there's so many people, they're striving to be a success in life. But not, you see, they all want to be the leader. But not everyone can be the leader. Now, there can only be one Prime Minister of India at a time. So many people, they want to be leaders, feeling pain. Why is that? Bodily pain? You have it much? In winter more? Agni Tundi Bhati. Take that, it's the best thing. It's an Ayurvedic medicine, very cheap. Take that and it burns out all the pain in the body. I'm going to write that down. So they want to be leader. So many people want to be leader, but how many people can be a leader? So what will happen is, they want to be a leader, they want to enjoy being dominating over others. So they may get the opportunity, maybe not in this life, maybe in another life. Among all the dogs, they may be the top dog. You see, all the dogs in the neighborhood, they're barking. And one dog is prominent because she's bigger and can bark louder, show his teeth more. So that dog becomes the leader of the local dogs. It's because in his previous life he had a desire, let me be the leader. And he strived for that. So Krishna is fulfilling his desire. Of course, he could be a leader by becoming Indra also. But for that, he will have to be very pious. But if he's leading a sinful life, and he wants to be a leader so that he can impress the women, and he can enjoy. So in dog's life, he can do. Or donkey, can be the top donkey. You see? So And this way, most people don't even have a clear goal. And even those that do, even those whose life is focused, just like you see, why America is such a prominent country in the world, because there's a very strong work ethic. People, so many people are very ambitious to get ahead. So their life is focused out on Germany, you see. People out digging the road at 6 o'clock in the morning, real mudas. So working early in the morning, working hard, they have some goal of life. But the goal is useless. What is it? Simply to get some money, and then they think, if I can have a BMW car or a Mercedes, and that is very good. What is that? What is the use? Just like Prabhupada said, they're so proud of driving their car, but they're running on four wheels. It's the same thing, the dog is running on four legs. So what is the progress? What is the advancement? So real progress means progress towards Krishna. It is the real goal of life. That we are simply to understand this, that anything in this material world, whatever goals we have, they're all useless, because they're all simply causes of suffering. Yehi sanspashaja bhoga dukha yonya evate adyantavanta kantaya nateshu ramate buddha. All the so-called enjoyment in this material world, what is it? It's simply the interaction of the senses with the sense objects. The eye sees something, the ear hears something, the skin touches, smell, taste. So it's simply the interaction of the senses with their objects, but it doesn't bring any happiness. There's never been an instance in this world, in this universe, of anyone becoming satisfied by sense enjoyment. There's simply some temporary euphoria, hallucination of happiness, but it doesn't satisfy the soul. Therefore, not only does it not satisfy, but it is the cause of suffering. If you enjoy sense gratification, then you have to suffer in the future. That's all. Therefore, an intelligent person knowing this does not take part in sense gratification. An intelligent person knows that Krishna is the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend, the creation, the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal seat. Therefore, he surrenders to Krishna. Hare Krishna. Question? Any question?
How distract? What is the difference between karma yoga and bhakti yoga? Sure, what's because last time my friend asked me, and I don't know, maybe I don't even do right.
When we speak of yoga, we refer to linking our consciousness with the Supreme Absolute Truth. Such a process is named differently by various practitioners in terms of the particular method adopted. When the linking process is predominantly in fruitive activities, it is called karma yoga. When it is predominantly empirical, it is called jnana yoga. And when it is predominantly in a devotional relationship with the Supreme Lord, it is called bhakti yoga.
Means a person who works on karma yoga, he don't think on Krishna, he deep to the soul on Krishna.
Yeah, but it's predominantly in fruitive activities. That means his main goal of life is he's working. One who works simply to satisfy himself, he is called a karmi. But one who keeps Krishna in mind and offers at least some of the results, he may be called a karma yogi. The one whose only goal is to satisfy Krishna, he is called a bhakti yogi. Bhakti yoga is also sometimes called karma yoga, because there are so many activities. But that's a different definition. The general definition of karma yoga is that someone he's basically working for his own satisfaction, but he's offering the result to Krishna. And in the beginning stage of karma yoga, there is the desire to, he's offering something with the idea of getting something in return. Then later comes nishkam karma yoga, without any, by cultivating knowledge, then he, by increasing knowledge, then he tries to work simply for the sake of performing his duty. And often there won't be a very clear idea of Krishna either. Just like we see, The karma yogis, they generally perform sacrifices in which the enjoyer of the sacrifice is Vishnu. But often they don't have a very clear concept of that. If they had a clear concept, can only come when one's attitude is to surrender to Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, in describing karma yoga, Lord Krishna gives the example of Janak Maharaj. Now you see there are many kings in history who strictly followed the Varnashram rules and regulations. And externally they appear to be karma yogis, but their goal was to satisfy Krishna. So they're actually bhakti yogis. But they followed all the rules and regulations, just like Krishna says. Kings like Janak Maharaj followed all the rules and regulations just to set a good example for others. Even Krishna, he said, he follows all the rules and regulations just to set a good example for others. Krishna said, if I didn't follow all these duties, then others would imitate me and that would cause destruction in the world. So for the general people who are not elevated to the platform of bhakti yoga, karma yoga is important, because this all Krishna describes is in Gita, that everyone has to do some work. You can't not work. Everyone's doing something all the time. So karma yoga means the Vedic process by which one links his work, he directs his work in such a direction that he can gradually come to the highest consciousness. So Krishna describes all this, the cycle of work, that what is that? Anadhavanti Bhuta. Everyone lives by food grains. Food grains are produced by rains. Rains are performed by sacrifice. And sacrifices can be performed when one performs prescribed activities. So everyone has to follow the prescribed activities in the Vedas, and then that will bring all auspiciousness in society. So that's on the Karma Kanda platform. That's not divorced from a concept of Krishna, but it's also not with a clear concept of Krishna. There's still the motive to enjoy this material world. Actually, in Kali Yoga, we just come straight to Bhakti Yoga, because you know, we can't follow all these things, and our life isn't long enough. We see kings like Yayati. You know, they went through a long life of enjoying. And then they came at the end to the conclusion. They were devotees, but they had some material desires. They recognized that, so they went through a lifetime of following their prescribed duties according to the Varnashram system. And at the end, they renounced everything and went to the forest and became fully devotees. You going to say something?
Yeah, I was wondering, like the impersonalists, they say that karma yoga means to do work without results. They have no idea of whom to offer it to. So they say it's just a change in mentality. That, like, they're trying to think that I'm not actually doing this. So is that at all possible to be unattached to the roots?
Well, that's like approaching the impersonal understanding of the Absolute. So, yeah, that said, nishkam karma, to work without any personal desire. So that means that one is moving towards the path of impersonalism. It's not really, I mean, compared to bhakti yoga, it's all, on one side, it's all very weak and very not, these processes can't actually help us very much. This path is, some places in Shastra this path is recommended, in other places it's condemned. It's recommended because if you're on this path, at least you're on some kind of a path. You're not just completely engaging in simple activities going to hell. And if you are on this path, you have some contact with Vishnu. But then, at the same time, if you consider, instead of doing that, you could be directly worshipping Krishna. If you consider it from that perspective, it's just it's just a cookie. So weak, and so it's so away from the point that it's condemned. So on one side it's praised, on the other side it's condemned.
A householder who works outside, after something that can get so many people.
Do you have a small factory?
No, my friend, he works with me in India, he lives already here, because he has things to do. guide of your deeds and thoughts, you know. And we discussed this point, how we know Bhakti Yoga. Is he engaged in Bhakti Yoga when he gives some of his fruits, of his work to the temple? Because he made many things in our temple. You know,
it's right. Well, much depends upon the attitude and the understanding of the person. A lot depends on his attitude. Now you'll find many businessmen or in India, they say, I am a karma yogi. They say, I work very hard and I give up all the results. I don't keep anything for myself. I give it all to my wife. So I'm a great karma yogi. I give it all to my family. Or I build hospitals. This is Jashamatinanda Prabhu was discussing in the class this morning. Hindi class. That Amanda Daya Daya, there's one verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, actually written by Sri Damodara Goswami, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his mercy, the mercy that he's come to give, is a kind of mercy that doesn't cause any harm. Mostly the kind of mercy that people distribute in this world, it is a harm-giving mercy. In the name of helping others, they harm them. Just like Mother Teresa, everyone says she's a great saint, but she helped the poor people by feeding them meat and giving them sinful reactions. So without proper knowledge, the so-called mercy is a cause of harm. If you build a big hospital and say, oh, you're doing such good work, but you're just keeping people in illusion because you're keeping them in the bodily concept of life. And anyway, if they have to suffer some sinful reaction, then they have to suffer, and there's nothing you can do about it to stop it, however many hospitals you build. So this is harm-giving mercy, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, that is non-harm-giving mercy, it is the cause of all actual auspiciousness. It is the... it's a very poetic language. I don't know how to translate it properly. The rising of non-harm-giving mercy, something like that. So many people in India will call themselves a karma yogi. But actually, of course, if they give some money to the temple, that's nice. But unless you clearly understand what is the goal of life, who is Krishna, what is our relationship with Him, unless your life is dedicated in that way, then it can't properly be called bhakti yoga. Of course, it may be just even what we are doing. Actually, real bhakti begins at prema. So there are different levels. You can't call it bhakti. Just like Prabhupada said, everyone in India is Krishna conscious, even the Muslims. So it's also true. That doesn't mean we don't have to preach to them. It's not that they're all pure devotees. But something is there. You see, people have a natural attraction. You come in the temple, it's so nice. You see so many people. They like this. They like to chant and they like to dance. So they have bhakti. You can say they have bhakti in their hearts. But it's not so much developed. So I don't think there's not really that much need to split hairs. Rather, I would encourage him, yes, you're doing bhakti, now come up more, come up more, come up more. Instead of saying, no, you're just a karma yoga. There is an idea propagated also, this actually comes from Mayavadis. Shankaracharya taught this, that spiritual life begins when you take sannyas. That you can't actually have spiritual life unless you renounce from this material world. But that's not Vaishnava in this world. Vaishnava understanding is that from any position you can serve Krishna. Depends on our attitude. So if our attitude is to serve Krishna wholeheartedly, then that is bhakti. And even if someone may appear to be an attached householder, if his motive is to satisfy Krishna, even if there may be some material attachment there, then he's a bhakti yogi, no doubt about it. Durvasa Muni made that mistake. He thought, I'm advanced and I'm Ambarish Maharaj. He's just an attached householder. But he was a great devotee, so much so that Lord Krishna personally sent his Sudarshan Chakra to protect him. And also, you know, it's not necessarily that by taking sannyas one just, that he's free from material attachments. We have so many. Prabhupada writes in one purport that a sannyasi, he may be attached to his water pot. And he may have a small room, may not be a very opulent room, but he may be attached to that. This is my room. So Prabhupada wrote, it's not as binding as the attachment that a householder may have. But still, it's an attachment. A sannyasi should be careful of that. Bhakti, Paresha Anubhavo Virakteya Anyakta. This verse is there. Bhakti means experience of God, and that is tested by one's detachment from material sense gratification. So there are general classifications. This is bhakti yogi, this is karma yogi, this is kanishtha adhikari, madhyam adhikari. But these are general gradations. Someone may manifest some of the symptoms of kanishtha adhikari and some of the symptoms of madhyam adhikari. In other words, he may have strong faith and philosophical conviction, and even good sadhana, but he may have some attachment, some neophyte tendencies also. So this kanishta madhyam uttam is not, you say it's we're supposed to be elevated from kanishta to madhyam to uttam adhikari stage, but it's not that it's just like a complete black and white. It's like one morning you wake up and when you went to sleep you were kanishta adhikari, and then you wake up the next morning and all of a sudden boom, I'm madhyam. It doesn't work with them. It's a gradual process. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Bhagavad Gita.